Hi, and welcome to MedCurity Live. I am Joe Galatly, and today we're talking with Brant Borchert. On this episode, you'll hear Brant share the building blocks of an information security program and what those in healthcare organizations should be considering as they evaluate appropriate risk levels for their clinic or their hospital. Brant also shares some interesting and even scary scenarios of what are on the horizon for us and what we should be preparing for when it comes to security in healthcare. So we're very grateful to Brant for joining us. I hope you enjoy this episode. Here we go. Thank you for joining us, Brant.
I'm super happy to be here. Thank you for having me.
Happy New Year to all of you. This is an exciting opportunity for us to learn a bit from Brant and his role with MultiCare and some great experience as well. Brant, would you start out by telling us a bit about your background, your origin story, if you will, and what led you to this position?
Absolutely. So born and raised in Idaho, attended public school just like most everybody else in the country. Ended up attending University of Idaho and did not study IT or anything technically related. In fact, I graduated with degrees in marketing, German, and music. I had no idea what I wanted to do. We ended up moving to California, and I ended up in an interview for a large grocery chain. And once we started talking about music, I got the job because the woman interviewing me was very interested in singing.
So that degree came in handy.
Degree came in handy really quickly, which sort of follows that path that many people share of, I studied X in college and have ended up my entire career doing Y. So that was a project for implementing Sarbanes-Oxley compliance, which was initiated after all the Enron and WorldCom scandal stuff to make sure public companies were effectively managing their controls around financial reporting. A component of that was IT general controls. And I don't know if it was just a knack or what, but I turned out to be pretty good at doing process definition and control design and kind of moved into the IT general control space, doing audit and assessment for compliance. Shortly after that, well, maybe not shortly, a few years after that, the drive to move back home hit me and I ended up in Idaho again working for a health insurance provider. Started out doing internal audit work and quickly learned that we needed to make some investments in information security. So I moved on to the execution side of the house versus the assessment side and started building an information security program there. We had pretty good success and the bug to jump hit me again and I moved into the tech sector for a company that designs and manufactures storage and memory chips. Really large global organization. So quickly, I felt like not the smartest guy in the room again, which is both humbling and a really great experience to be around people who know a lot more than you. And I spent a few years doing control framework implementation in a manufacturing setting and in an environment where intellectual property was really the crown jewel. Versus something like PHI or credit card data, a pretty different approach to how you protect data. Then the most recent jump, my wife grew up here in Coeur d'Alene locally, and we had always wanted to get back up here. And the call back to a not-for-profit community-based organization hit me, and this opportunity presented itself. And so I joined MultiCare as the Director of Information Security with a primary task of helping drive the implementation of security control frameworks across the organization.
Could you tell us just a bit about MultiCare, so the scope of that organization?
Absolutely. MultiCare is a not-for-profit healthcare provider organization based out of Tacoma, Washington. They've been around for over 100 years in that area, and they have recently adopted a vision and mission of expansion and partnering with other entities to provide high-value healthcare across the Northwest. A little over two years ago, MultiCare purchased a couple of hospitals and a provider, a clinic organization here in Spokane, and they're now running this as a division within the MultiCare family.
And that's that organization then you stepped into, and what was the role? You said Director of Information Security. So what does that role look like? What is the scope of that work with MultiCare?
Interestingly, it's kind of shifted a little bit. Initially, they brought me in to implement HITRUST, which is our security framework of choice, in the Inland Northwest. As a new division within the organization, it was something that hadn't been included in previous assessments and some of the control design and implementation. So I showed up and started doing assessments and figured out pretty quickly that we do in fact operate as a system for the most part. So things that are in place for the Tacoma, Puget Sound region side are in place for our entity here. So it turned out to be a little bit less of, hey, go build things from scratch and make sure we're doing the right thing, and a little bit more of a, let's just unify documentation and processes and make sure that we can defend all the things that we're doing. The other part of it turned out to be just a little bit of kind of general IT leadership and applying non-healthcare thinking to a healthcare environment.
Let's take a moment there, Brant. So non-healthcare thinking, so as you came in from these other roles that you've just described for us, how did you find healthcare to be different, and what were takeaways as you looked at healthcare coming in from this manufacturer and this grocery background?
Yeah, the first thing that struck me is early in my career, as we would talk about challenges in our environment, we were very frequently saying, at the end of the day, nobody's gonna die. And when you get into healthcare, that's just not true anymore. When things go badly, it really can impact people in a really serious way. So the stakes of the game raise a little bit in terms of the impacts of failures across the environment, which is great for driving support for initiatives, right? You really can say, if we don't do this, I cannot give you a certain level of assurance that these kinds of bad things won't happen. On the other hand, it's pressure, right? It kind of changes the conversation. In the tech sector, we had a lot of money and resources available, right? So it was a little bit less of should we do it and a little bit more of how quickly can you make it happen? And certainly in the not-for-profit space and in the healthcare space in general, coffers tend to be less deep, and the willingness to make investments or the capability to make investments can be a little bit limited just based on how dollars need to get spent through the organization and what the revenue model looks like. So certainly a lot more confinement on how you invest and where you invest, which frankly prompts better decision making and thinking so that we really can focus on what are the most important things to the organization in terms of protecting and managing, and how do we most effectively apply resources toward protecting and managing that in a way that doesn't stifle the organization being able to do what it needs to do.
I appreciate that perspective, Brant, because you're saying it's not just healthcare is slower. We're just watching everybody else and following 10 years later, but we can be tactical, we can be strategic, and we can be targeted what we do and how we prioritize our investments.
Absolutely. You know, we frequently talk about, and you know, I've been doing security for a while, I've had lots of assessments, I've been involved with a lot of consultants, and almost all the time it feels like they walk in and say, can you tell me where your organization's crown jewels are, or even what they are, right? Mm-hmm. In some cases we don't even know, because we think, oh, it's PHI, but really we have all this other process or service data that's really, really important, and we probably should protect that too. So really taking the time to look at your organization and understand from a compliance perspective, an operational perspective, and an overall organizational value perspective, where is the stuff that matters the most? And do we think we're applying the best controls that we can to protect and manage those jewels the way that we're comfortable? Because sometimes an organization may look at something and say, we're actually okay to take the risk associated with not protecting it, because protecting it is such a hindrance to our operation. And this is sacrilege for a lot of security people, I know. They're allowed to take that risk, right? I've said to people a lot, you don't have to be HIPAA compliant. You can choose not to be. The consequences are kind of steep if you get caught not being HIPAA compliant, but nobody is making you do it. And it's the same thing across all the risk spectrum, right? If I can show up and present you pretty accurate and meaningful risk information, then as a non-security practitioner and a business leader, you should be able to make a decision about whether you want to make an investment or whether you're okay with current state.
We'll be careful, Brant, not to use that quote out of context there that I just heard about HIPAA. That's excellently worded, and let's dive in a bit deeper into risk then. So how, as an organization now, and then if you were in a smaller group as well, how do you quantify and how do you begin to look at impact likelihood? What does risk mean to you, and what are some of the factors that you take into consideration when you start thinking risk for an organization?
Yeah, I think people are typically still using the impact likelihood scale, right? You can have different levels, whether it's a 3x3 matrix or 5x5. I've not seen a lot of deviations from that. There's certainly been improvements in establishing that level based on data versus a gut feel. And for me, that's actually a little bit painful because a lot of my career, I've looked at it and gone, that's a medium risk. The likelihood's medium. But it's good to prompt me and other people to change and say, why? What makes that medium? Let's put some criteria around how we actually make that decision. And then same thing in the likelihood, in the impact scale. I think we were talking before about trying to come up with different ways to look at what the impact might be. Maybe it's a compliance or regulatory type impact. It might be an operational type impact where you can't perform a certain function for some period of time. Could be strictly financial, where you just lose money if that thing happens. And then figuring out what that scale looks like and trying to match it to some sort of organizational tolerance. And a lot of people will tell you, hey, our tolerance for security events is pretty low. Our tolerance for non-compliance is pretty low. Mathematically, sometimes that doesn't make sense. I won't say where, but I worked with an organization at one point where we were going through PCI compliance. We were talking about pretty significant investments to become compliant, and somebody turned and said, what's the impact of being non-compliant? And we said, I think it's $1,000 a month fine. And they did the math and said, okay, we're talking about $12,000 versus $1.5 million to fix it. Why would I ever do that? And you got to make then a reputation decision of, do we want to be able to say we're PCI compliant? Or is this really a financial thing, right? So you look at different ways to assess the risk and then hopefully make an informed decision.
So building on that, you're saying more than just financial. It's not just it's this spend and it's this risk financially. There's other factors that go
absolutely,
into that.
Absolutely.
Reputational, you just mentioned. Mm-hmm. Others off the top of your mind, other factors that come in when you're evaluating risk in that way?
Reputational is certainly a big one for any consumer-driven or service-driven organization, right? There are some kind of interesting pieces of data, though, that make me at least question, in the current environment, how much a certain security event can really impact your reputation. And again, this is sacrilege for a security person to say. It's not super common that companies go out of business because of a security event. And you look at some of the biggest ones, right? Your Targets, your Home Depots, TJ Maxx way back in the day. They're all still in business. And they might experience little blips in customer visits and certain hits to their stock and things like that. But they typically survive. And when we look at enterprise risk as a whole, lots of companies go out of business because they make really bad strategic decisions. And so when you look at enterprise risk for an organization to say, what's going to keep us in business 10 years from now, 15 years from now, or 30 years from now, I at least question, is information security or an information security event one of those things? It could be. It could not be. But people's emotional reaction to it in an organizational leadership role typically doesn't reflect that kind of thinking. They're very, very afraid of being the next person or the next organization to be on the front page of the paper because of an event. Now, I think the landscape's changing a little bit. For quite a while, the impacts have been data loss, right? Bad guys are stealing information because they can sell it somewhere else. Certainly in the healthcare space, there's a shift now toward, I don't need to actually take your data out, I just need to make it so you can't access it, and then you'll pay me some money and I'll let it go. I think we're gonna see an additional change where they're not threatening to just keep it under lock and key, but they may just change it completely or delete it completely, right? This idea of destruction. This goes a little bit back to, we didn't talk about it much at the beginning, but the core tenets of information security, right? Typically, we look at confidentiality, integrity, and availability. For a long, long time, confidentiality has been what we talked about, right? We want to keep access to sensitive information limited to those people who need to see it. Availability is the new thing in the healthcare space, right? We're going to launch a crypto malware attack at you. You can't use your systems. Then you're going to give us some money. We're going to unlock it and you can go back. The integrity piece is the part that we really haven't seen a lot of attacks and exploits yet, where they're saying, if you don't give me money, I'm just going to delete the whole thing. Or I'll go in and maliciously change some data strategically so that bad things happen, right? And kind of the, I don't know if you want to call it conspiracy theory or extreme thinking philosophies, but the idea is, hey, if there are high-ranking military officials or politicians or other very important people, and I know that they have a drug allergy to X, if I can go in and delete that from their record and then somehow prompt a visit to the doctor where they might get that drug, it won't be there. They could be administered something that could be harmful to them, et cetera.
And I have to say, that's not a scenario I've thought of. Thank you for putting that in our
stuff,
nightmares
right?
now.
Yeah.
Yes, yeah, very interesting.
Again, you know, that's edge. It's edge thinking. It's stuff that at least I've not heard or seen yet. But those are the things that futurist, forward-looking thinkers, at least that I've interacted with, are saying, you know, this is the kind of stuff that we'd be dealing with. Very, very targeted, cyber-based, political, geopolitical-driven activity, right?
It's interesting, as you describe that, one thing that seems to come up here fairly frequently is the foresight that went into the security rule under HIPAA in 2003 to leave areas of that not so specifically defined that it didn't apply, you know, once you get 5 years or 10 years down the road with technology advances. But integrity was a core component there, right? So confidentiality, like you said, we all focus on that, and that is obviously large in the security rule.
Yeah.
Availability is there too, and then integrity is as well. And one thing that we, you know, I'd absolutely agree and have seen is that integrity is not something we all have a handle on yet. How do we know if the data has been compromised or adjusted?
Right.
We don't necessarily have the tools in place to do that in a lot of areas yet. If you would take, so you've described a bit of an information security program.
Mm-hmm.
If you would take that and break it down into some building blocks, if I'm a clinic or if I'm a hospital that's not yet been able to give a lot of thought and strategy around this, where would you start? What are the key building blocks to say we need to build an information security program?
So I won't reinvent the wheel. The easiest place to go, and this is probably where it gets hard for organizations that have some limited resources, is any of the standard frameworks out there. So we've had the SANS Top 20, which I think is now the CIS Top 20, changed their name. NIST, which is the federal government's series of guidelines. They have 853, which is the typical control set, and then the CSF, which is the cybersecurity framework. Those are great. In the healthcare space, HITRUST is good. It's been designed to overarch and encompass PCI and I think FISMA and a whole bunch of other frameworks, which is helpful if you want to kind of have one ring to rule them all. I think the hard part, in my experience, has been having someone who can translate this language that's been designed to meet the needs of any kind of organization. And keep in mind, something like HITRUST can apply to a provider, a health insurer, a claims processor, right? There are a lot of different kinds of organizations for whom it should apply. So a lot of the control objectives are written fairly generically so that they don't have to make something special for every kind of vertical, right? So the hard part is finding someone who can take that information and make it meaningful in your context. So I would look at those. They typically break them down. This won't be comprehensive just because my memory is not that good, but some kind of access management and identity management, right, which addresses the confidentiality piece. Let's make sure that if you can log into our systems, you're an approved person, and what you have access to is what you should have access to. And then there are a lot of sort of baseline stuff that goes with that, password control and timeouts, and certainly remote access now. Multi-factor authentication is pretty critical, and if you're not doing it, you should be. So access for sure is one thing. I probably should move back one step. Some sort of policy foundation is probably the first step, because that can help drive all the things you decide to do. And there are lots of available policy frameworks. In fact, I think your organization even offers one through the product that you're managing. So you don't have to start from scratch and try to figure out what you need to do. And a lot of these other frameworks will also give you pretty clear guidance. Your policy should contain these kinds of things. So that's great. Access management, really good thing. Some sort of risk program, hopefully tied to your HIPAA compliance, is ideal. HIPAA requires an annual risk assessment, right? So having, whether in-house with your own team or having some sort of consulting organization who can show up and make sense of what you need to be doing in alignment with the HIPAA risk requirements, and hopefully those just match up to whatever framework you're doing. It also, on top of the compliance checkbox, if you do it well, it should help provide really good information and context for how you make decisions on what else you need to do, right? Smaller organizations are typically not going to invest in some of the flashy whiz-bang security stuff, which is probably appropriate. And, you know, the bigger, more complex you get, probably the more you need to have capabilities and structured investments around protecting the assets that you need to protect. And I think going back to what we talked about before, this concept of crown jewels and what really matters in your organization can be a great part of the first step as well, right? And sometimes this feels overwhelming, right? It's a lot to do at once. And I get that. It's important, though. And being able to commit a reasonable amount of resources is a good thing for an organization.
If I could tag a quick question onto that.
Yep.
So you referenced the high trust framework. And this is subjective, I understand. Is there value in attaining the high trust certification for a healthcare organization? Or is it more just, let's find the principles, let's follow those as building this program against?
Probably depends on your business model, actually. Foundationally, I think the big value is understanding the controls and the objectives and following those principles, because that's what ultimately lowers your risk as an organization. My personal experience is that the certification comes in largely as a marketing tool and as a tool that you can use when you are doing business with other people. So we're a covered entity. When we sign agreements with BAAs and we're extending our data into their environment, it makes me feel better when they say, not only do we follow HITRUST, but a third party comes out and tests us every year, and here's the attestation that says we're doing what we should. That makes me feel good. So for people who want to do business with us, it can streamline the negotiation and contract process versus going through something that might be much more granularly defined that says, hey, you have an access management program, you have a security monitoring program, you annually review your program, you know, all this other stuff. In my experience, it typically makes the organization feel better when a certification of some kind is there. There's a lot of kind of economic theory built into this idea that if we all band together and say everybody should be high trust, then nobody will complain about it because everyone will do it already. It sounds really neat, and you know, on paper it looks good, but it's really hard for people to do that. And there are lots of situations where becoming certified doesn't make sense for an organization. So, you know, making that a requirement or your baseline can just be challenging, because you'll run into lots of exceptions, which just leads you to need to have a good exception process.
That's well said. I completely agree on HITRUST being very important from a marketing tool. Again, that's not demeaning a marketing tool that can be very valuable. However, you know, doctor's offices are not likely to have the patients saying, well, I'd like to see you, but do you have your HITRUST?
Yeah, I think that's right. Yeah. I think at the patient level, folks are not going to be aware of what that means, but having a little official looking seal does sometimes make people comfortable, right? It's the old 70s commercials. I'm not a doctor, but I play one on TV, right. And you go, well, he's wearing a white coat. He must be knowledgeable.
Looks legit.
Yes. Right.
So in closing, you've shared a bit about integrity becoming a focus area. And so do you have other thoughts as you look at information security focus areas for the coming years as we come into 2020 and look ahead? What do you see on new opportunities, new risks in this area of focus?
So certainly medical IoT, Internet of Things, is a really hot topic, right? A little bit back to our discussion about this idea of manipulating someone's drug allergies to do bad things. The same fear exists for medical IoT. As technology improves, we're doing more and more implants and more connected devices that either manage something for a person, whether it's release of drugs or regulating a heart rate and like a pacemaker or something like that, or even brain implants that would release stimulation, that kind of thing. That is an opportunity for a bad person to do a bad thing. Right. And those types of products and tools can drastically improve and change someone's life. Right. I mean, insulin pumps were a huge, huge deal for people dealing with type 1 diabetes, because now they don't have to worry about checking their blood sugar every hour or whatever the time frame was. Right. And they got something that's doing it automatically. Very typically of things like this, I think the people who manufacture those devices were not thinking about security when they make them. They're thinking, I want it to be easy to use. I want it to be reasonably cost effective in terms of delivering to a patient. So as we look at the proliferation of those things in the marketplace, it's becoming a bigger and bigger risk just because the scope is bigger and they're being added to more and more things that could negatively impact a person's life if it were to be compromised in some way. So there's still a lot of buzz around medical IoT.
I feel like you have the makings of a good script for a good for thriller, a good movie there.
Yeah. Secondly, this is not specific to healthcare. It's everywhere. This migration away from our own data centers to cloud and the ease with which a new product can be presented to any kind of company and say, hey, we're completely in the cloud. You don't have to do anything. You can just log in here and we'll manage all this stuff for you. It's fundamentally changing what has historically been a pretty standard approach to security, which is build a great big wall around the stuff I care about and only let the people in and out that are allowed to go in and out. This is not a new concept, I don't think, so I don't want to pretend like I've made this up or I'm somehow a genius for talking about this, but the idea of the perimeter, I think, has gone away. So it changes how we look at managing access to stuff, because it used to be, if you got inside, I inherently trusted you. And now we have to move away from that to say, I can't really trust you or anybody else because I don't know if you're real. And so this perimeterless kind of zero trust approach to doing authorization and authentication at every end resource, I think, is a direction that folks are going, and also managing at the data level versus like an entire repository or an entire environment. Certainly people are already doing this and doing it well, and it's not a new concept, but I think it's becoming more and more prevalent as cloud hosting becomes easier and cheaper and more effective, and they're getting good at security, right? I mean, they're frankly doing it a lot better than a lot of companies, so it's an easier leap. And as it gets harder to kind of manage the complexities of a data center on your own, I think that's another big thing that's happening out there.
Well, I appreciate the insights, the education. This has been very, very interesting. I hope that maybe you could join us again, Brant, to drill in a couple of these topics, because there's a lot here, but you've given us some great things to think about today. So thank you for joining us.
Yeah, thank you so much for having me. It was a great pleasure to talk with you.
Thanks for joining us, and we will be back next week.